It's the Morning Show. I'm Carrie Kaufman on the Ideas Network. Northern Wisconsin has dealt with three floods in the last 6 years that cost millions of dollars in damage. It's no secret that the region is seeing more frequent intense rainfalls. As Danielle Kading reports, the region is trying to find ways to manage stormwater runoff and reduce the amount of sediment washing into Lake Superior.
Not far from the area where U.S. Highway 2 washed out in June, Tom Gazdick leads the way to a roughly half-acre pond on the back of his property. His grandfather came here to farm in the early 1900s.
This was all dairy farms, so the cattle would graze in the forest. There would be trails all over, and it was ideal for raising cattle because there was a lot of water available.
But the water also made it difficult to farm, and many producers gave up growing crops or hay. Gazdick's father gave it up long ago. He says that made it an ideal spot for installing a wetland pond.
I grew up playing back here in all the springs and all that stuff, so I knew that this was ideal for a pond, and I always wanted to have some up here. And when I heard about this project, I'm going, oh my God, this is perfect.
Northland College in Ashland is working with landowners like Gazdick to slow the flow of runoff from heavy rains into North Fish Creek using money from the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. Matt Hudson is associate director of the college's Center for Freshwater Innovation. He says wetland ponds could be part of the solution.
If we can hold back some of that water on the landscape before it gets into the stream, we can reduce the amount of water that rushes into the stream at one time and reduce the amount of erosion that happens in the stream, and then reduce the amount of sediment that gets into Schwamigan Bay.
Has it gone down since the storm, Tom?
Yes.
Pond has? Okay.
But it's not always easy to get landowners on board. Travis Tulowitzki with Bayfield County Land and Water says they've done 8 ponds with 3 landowners.
Farmers, for the most part, do not want to give up their field. That's their livelihood. So if we can find areas that are kind of in that transition, it's not completely forested, and this is really an ideal site because it's still open. It has a lot of drainages that are going towards North Fish.
Tulowitzki says they're building these ponds to withstand 100-year floods.
Because of the tendency of our storms lately, we are pushing most everything for 100-year at least.
That's a flood that has a 1% chance of happening in any given year. If the pond overflows, that water runs into a rock-lined spillway. The rocks spread out and slow down water heading toward North Fish Creek. When heavy rains hit in June, Gazdick admits he was worried about whether his 4 ponds would hold.
Yeah, I was concerned, but everything worked out great.
A lot of this work stems from previous studies by the U.S. Geological Survey. They found North Fish Creek is already prone to flash floods and erosion. That's due in part to the region's clay soils and sandy deposits left over from receding glaciers. Heavy logging and farming at the turn of the 20th century made it even worse. Matt Hudson with Northland College says they want to reduce the impact people have on the land.
With changing climate and stuff like that, we want to promote a system that's more resilient if we're going to have more of these floods in the future.
Hudson says they're also working with a stream restoration firm to stabilize eroding banks by creating log jams in the creek. About 2/3 of the sediment that ends up in Chemawagan Bay on Lake Superior comes from its large eroding banks. He hopes projects upstream with landowners and downstream in the creek will improve flood resilience, fish habitats, and water quality.
It's helping with a public resource need in terms of improving Fish Creek and reducing sediment to the bay, which, you know, affects the city of Ashland's drinking water and all the recreation and boating and charter fishing and all the people living in the Ashland area.
He says a little prevention may cut back on the threat floodwaters pose to their quality of life. Danielle Kading, Wisconsin Public Radio.
It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Okay, this is a call-in show, and we want to hear your views no matter where you come down. The legal outcomes on Tuesday involving 2 of a sitting president's advisors, Paul Manafort and Michael Cohen, are without parallel in our history. But will these decisions make a difference in the mindsets of people who support Trump and people who don't? So we're going there. We want to know what you thought of Tuesday's proceedings. Did they make you hate Trump more? Did they make you love Trump more? Are you not sure what to think? 800-642-1234 is the number that you can call. Ideas@WPR.org is the email that you can use, or you can tweet WPR Mornings. I'm also going to say that people have passionate views about President Trump, good or bad, and I'm going to ask that the discussion be respectful. Laura Brown is with us. She is an associate professor and director of graduate school of political management at George Washington University. She's the author of Jockeying for the American Presidency, The Political Opportunism of Aspirants. She also served in the Department of Education during President Bill Clinton's administration. Laura, have you had your Wheaties this morning?
Boy, I need some more coffee. That's all I can tell you, is that caffeine is what's going to pull us all through over the next few months.
I think so. I totally agree with that. Actually, I was just looking at my Starbucks app, in fact. So let's talk about Michael Cohen first, Trump's former longtime personal lawyer. Tuesday, he pleaded guilty to tax evasion, falsifying submissions to a bank, and campaign finance violations. What is the significance of this plea?
Well, I think what the largest significance. I mean, and this is where we're talking about there are multiple ramifications to this, is that he named the president as being the person who directed him in some of these acts. And I think that that is, without a doubt, a massive sort of undoing of the president's storylines about his presidency. We have one of the president's now, closest aides and personal attorney saying he committed felonious acts on behalf of a president of the United States who directed that action. And I just don't think that that can be set aside as fake news. We do live in a country of laws, and we do have a system of justice, and we do have individuals who have now either been convicted, as was Paul Manafort, or pleaded, as has been the case with both Mike Flynn and Michael Cohen. Mm-hmm. And what we are looking at is that the president's closest people have committed crimes.
I remember reading All the President's Men, and when the president's closest people committed crimes, when they got to the John Mitchell, our attorney general, committed crimes, it was pretty clear that the president was implicated. Is that the consensus now? It is pretty clear that Donald Trump is implicated in this. And what is he implicated in?
Well, he's been directly implicated. One of the things that's interesting about Watergate is, there wasn't essentially direct evidence. We have direct evidence, a tape of the president speaking with Michael Cohen about what to do and how to handle payments to, we believe, Karen McDougal, but it, was also related to Stormy Daniels. So this is a problem. And I do think that, other people have said this, but it is true. Were the president not sitting in the Oval Office, he would already be indicted for these crimes. And we're now in a situation where we don't yet understand the constitutionality of whether or not we can indict a president. Mm-hmm. That has not been tested. There are various constitutional scholars who sit on different sides of this issue. But I imagine this is going to be tested in the not-too-distant future, especially if impeachment is not sort of seen as a remedy.
You just brought up the impeachment word. We're going to follow that and the constitutionality question in a moment. We are talking to Laura Brown, who is a presidential legal expert, about what is going on with Trump and Manafort and Michael Cohen. We'll be back in a moment. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. The Cohen and Manafort court proceedings this week were historically significant, and they may be politically significant, but do they matter? With a polarized political climate, are the facts coming out making a difference? We're taking your calls here. Did you support Trump before? Do you still support Trump? Did you hate Trump before? Has this changed your mind or made you even angrier? Are you totally confused by what's going on? 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. We're talking today with Laura Brown, who's an associate professor and director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. So you brought up the impeachment word. You say that that there is a direct implication of the president here, and the constitutionality of whether or not a sitting president can be indicted. Tell me what happened with Clinton. Nobody was indicted with Clinton, but he was compelled to testify, correct?
That's right. So what we had was a resistance on the part of President Clinton to give testimony in the Paula Jones sexual harassment lawsuit, which was a civil suit, not a criminal suit. He and his attorneys put forward executive privilege and sort of a series of other claims, namely that the president is too busy to give testimony.
And that's Brett Kavanaugh has come forward a while ago. Brett Kavanaugh, who's the Supreme Court nominee, and has said that. He was on Ken Starr's commission that investigated the president, and he's changed his mind after working for President Bush and said, yeah, the president is too busy.
Right. Well, the Supreme Court ruled unanimously, by the way, that the president is not too busy.
Okay.
It is also the case that when we look back to Watergate, the Supreme Court has always held that the president is not above the law. So I happen to agree with my colleague here at George Washington University, Jonathan Turley, that that this just hasn't been tested, and that these memos that have been written by the Justice Department in various points in time are sort of interesting arguments, but they don't really hold water when you look at either the precedents that have come down or the overall notion. Because if you exempt presidents from basically criminal statutes while they are serving in office, then what allows you to say that they are upholding their oath of office, which they take to the Constitution, not to, you know, their political party or any constituents who helped vote them in. They take an oath that they swear to protect and preserve the Constitution of the United States and take care of the laws, and to faithfully take care of the laws. So I think what we have to realize is that the president is supposed to be serving in that office as a servant to our Constitution and the laws, and in fact is there to execute those laws. So it is, to me, just completely inconsistent that a president could live above, outside, or around the laws in which they are essentially directed to execute.
So my question is, doesn't the Constitution hold that that Congress is supposed to keep the president in check, not necessarily the Justice Department?
Well, look, I think this is where the realities around impeachment are fascinating and have long, long histories. What the framers were clearly worried about were actions that were taken by the president that were political but not necessarily illegal, okay? Mm-hmm. So high crimes and misdemeanors refers to things where they could be subverting the Constitution, and it may be sort of in the political world understood to be treasonous but not necessarily in the legal world treasonous.
Okay.
Right? So I think one of the things that we sort of mistake is that we think that high crimes and misdemeanors would be something grander than the law. And I would argue that when you read those framers' debates and you really dig into this issue, that I think the framers were more concerned about something that was outside the law and may even not rise to the level of an actual crime. So, you know, this is where sort of you flip the sort of minimum, right? I think what the framers were concerned about is that actually reaching the standard of a crime may be too high. But at the same time, there are acts that are immoral, that are undermining the office of the presidency, that are going against the oath of office that the president takes, and those may be deemed immoral, inappropriate, absolutely wrong with regard to the office of the presidency, and should be something that allows the Congress to essentially remove the president in that situation. And I think all we have to think about is the fact that, you know, Representative Duncan Hunter was just indicted for misuse of campaign funds, for using campaign funds sort of on a personal level. And we had the president yesterday in a one-on-one interview with a Fox News reporter saying, oh, well, campaign finance isn't really a crime. Well, you know, tell Duncan Hunter that.
Right. Tell Jesse Jackson Jr. that. That's what ended his career.
Right. So there are many individuals in our past who this has been a very serious, very real crime. There are reasons why we have these laws on the books, and there's reasons why every elected official, including the president, is supposed to adhere to them.
So you come down on the idea that the Justice Department can impeach a can indict a sitting president.
I do. I think that while it hasn't been tested, I see no theoretical grounds that can excuse a president from legal behavior. Or illegal behavior, as you might want to refer to it.
We are talking about Michael Cohen and Paul Manafort and Donald Trump and what you think of them. 800-642-1234. We're taking your calls. Jerry from Waterford, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I appreciate it. What does rise to high crimes is the fact of trying to subvert our constitutional right to elect our president. That's been a tradition for 240 some years. And right now you have Mueller, who initially everybody thought was to investigate to make sure there wasn't fraud in the voting process. And it turns out that what he's trying to do now is basically trump up a case on pretty minor evidence, actually. Manafort's been convicted, but it has nothing to do with the Russian investigation. And basically, these people are being blackmailed to try and get them to find something that they can take and turn against Trump.
So, Jerry, I want to talk to you. I want to switch this a little bit here. In the Clinton impeachment, in the Clinton investigations, it started out as a Whitewater investigation of an investment, and it turned into a blue dress. It turned into Monica Lewinsky and Clinton lying about whether he had an affair. Do you think that was unfair also?
Yes, I do. And I think the people thought it was unfair, too, because they reelected Clinton. And I think that was a political move by the Republicans that should not have been done because it didn't rise to the level of high crimes. Consequently, they should not have done that. And the people chastised them for that. And I think that's the same situation here. And I can tell you that I think the people are going to chastise the Democrats for trying to do this. I'm an independent, actually. And I'll tell you, this has really upset me, what I've seen developing here, because it does not rise to the level of high crimes. And
okay, Jerry, thank you for that. I really, really appreciate that perspective. What do you have to say to that, Laura?
Well, I was going to ask, before you let Jerry go, curious.
Keep Jerry on, yeah.
I mean, I'm just curious as to what Jerry believes would rise to, impeachment or criminality. I mean, it is true that individuals who are serving in the armed forces who have extramarital affairs are essentially dishonorably discharged. I mean, we saw this end in some ways, General Petraeus's service and his decorated service as a general, was an extramarital affair whereby he shared information with his mistress, which was top secret. But I am curious as to what is the crime that would make somebody say, yes, we have a president who is engaged in corrupt dealings, because
we will get back to that in a moment. We are talking about the goings-on on Tuesday with Manafort and Cohen. And what do you think about President Trump? We're taking your calls. We'll be back in a moment. It's the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Well, this week has been a big week for President Trump. His longtime fixer and attorney, Michael Cohen, pleaded guilty to 8 counts, which included 2 counts of campaign finance fraud, which may implicate, or actually our guest says does implicate, the president. At the same time, Paul Manafort, Trump's campaign manager, was found guilty on 8 counts. Does this matter? With a polarized political climate, are the facts now coming out making a difference to people? We are taking your calls this morning, and we have calls stacked up here. 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. We're talking with Laura Brown, who is an associate professor and director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. Laura, before we get further into the conversation, we're going to take another call from Bob in the Milwaukee area. Bob, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, just want to say that I was actually a Trump voter, and if that matters. But I think big picture, in terms of the overarching thing, is that I think the framers really were ultimately concerned about having a king or not having a king. In other words, they didn't ever want to be in the position again of having one person that was somehow above or the law or immune to the law. And so I think that really infused the thinking around that. That said, I kind of voted for Trump because I guess ultimately I'm sort of a law and order kind of guy. And the irony that I'm seeing, and the reason why I've come sort of full circle on this, is that you can't have law and order if you have 2 sets of laws. You can't have a rule of law at all if you decide that it's only going to be applied to one group of people or one individual and not another. Or you can't be random. It needs to be applied equitably and fairly and across the entirety. And so that's kind of why I've come to see that this investigation is really a good thing. And if it was somebody else, I would say the same thing. I mean, the fact that I supported the person doesn't mean that I have to be blind to reality as it changes and fixed in one mindset. I mean, and it really bothers me where I see my friends that just can't seem to accept the idea that maybe they were wrong. You know, maybe they need to look at the evidence. And that brings us to the way that this sort of line of discovery. I mean, the way that the law works, as far as I understand it, and I'm not a lawyer, but the way that I understand it is that in the course of an investigation, if new evidence is found of other crimes, that's completely legitimate to go after. And in fact, a good thing. We wouldn't catch most of the criminals we catch if it didn't work that way. So I don't have a problem with that. I don't see it as a witch hunt. And I guess what I see is a sort of almost kind of unconditional love or adoration or sycophancy towards Trump on the part of a lot of people that reminds me almost of like having your mom as your judge in court. Everybody would like that, but that wouldn't work, right? Because you cannot apply law fairly if you have somebody that doesn't want to ever see her son or daughter accused of something. That's all.
I thank you very much, Bob. That was very detailed. And that takes us to another part of our conversation, Laura. Are you seeing or do you expect to see people like Bob who voted for Trump, who are conservatives, and who are very dismayed by what's going on right now?
Well, yes. And in fact, I mean, the Fox poll that just came out, a couple days ago, essentially shows this. I mean, Fox News did ask in their most recent national poll, do you approve or disapprove of Robert Mueller's investigation of the Trump campaign in Russia? And the, data that came back, I guess it was yesterday, it feels like weeks ago already, said that 59% of Americans approve of Robert Mueller's investigation of Trump and the Trump campaign. Only a month ago, in July, that number was 48%. So there was a jump of 11% of Americans, and I think this is precisely about individuals like Bob who are saying, wait a minute, I voted for this person because I really wanted Donald Trump to go to Washington to shake it up, to try to get some things done, to focus more on the economy and really how sort of the average American is doing, financially, because there were a lot of ways in which I think past administrations had focused kind of more on the bigger picture and hadn't really spent time thinking about what does globalization mean, what does all of the international trade agreements, what do they all mean for people on the ground?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Trump really gained a lot of credibility with a lot of people on that. And the problem is, I think what you see with Trump is the problem with a lot of outsiders who go into politics. They don't really understand the political process. They don't really appreciate kind of what rule of law and democratic sort of the system itself is about. They think that everything is about this kind of hierarchy where they can just make commandments and the government will follow. And that's not our system of government. And I do think that people who are conservatives, people who are concerned about the state of our country, will take a look at the new findings and the new pleas and have a different perspective. I mean, I think it's very difficult to say that there hasn't been wrongdoing here. We know that, George Papadopoulos has pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI about his contacts with Russia. Rick Gates, who was a former deputy campaign chairman, pleaded guilty to conspiring against the United States and lying to investigators. And this is really what Paul Manafort's trial in Washington, D.C. in another couple weeks is going to be about, And then you have all of the Russian intelligence officers and business entities that Bob Mueller has also indicted. There is a massive investigation that is bringing in a lot of people, and it's difficult to say that the president was all just unaware of it.
So what do you say to people? I mean, we've had two callers that have touched on this already who say that that this is not the Russia investigation. Jerry said this is not the investigation. They've strayed and this is bad. The next caller said that's how investigations work. What do you say to people who are like, what does Paul Manafort and Michael Cohen paying off a porn star have to do with the Russia investigation?
Well, I mean, I think what we're talking about is the practices in the campaign that were either sort of illegal or shady and potentially were illegal. So, one of the things I would argue here, and I think that it's important for people to realize is that politics is something of a difficult business. It is not just like, oh, gee, you know, you sign up to run for office and there's nothing required of you and all of a sudden you're on a ballot. There are a lot of rules and procedures and processes, and you have to file campaign reports, and there are reasons that you have sort of campaign treasurers and attorneys and a lot of people to help make sure that we have a process that is legal and fair. And I do think Jerry was right when he said the framers were really concerned about a president essentially bribing an elector in the Electoral College as being a way that they could get into office.
Mm-hmm.
So the process of democracy is really what we mean when we talk about a free and fair country and a country that lives by the rule of law.
We are taking calls this morning, 800-642-1234. We're going to go with Mark from Waukesha. Welcome to the program, Mark.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. The question, do I believe that the news that came out earlier this week will change people's opinions? I think it will change nobody's opinion. Unfortunately, I think we are in such a partisan climate that it is potentially the downfall of our country. I'll say this much. The last presidential election cycle, I was exceptionally unimpressed with either candidate, and I didn't vote for either one. Having said that, though, I do believe Donald Trump is an extremely dangerous personality in the case that he has created a situation based on partisanship, is that he is never wrong. There's nothing he can do that is wrong, and in fact that he has created a climate within his support group that he is greater than God, and that this is a witch hunt, and it's false news, and that he is, you know, the truth. And what I unfortunately potentially see happening is if Donald Trump was impeached, he would ask his group to go rioting in the streets, and I think literally he wouldn't step down even if we were on the brink of a civil war number two.
Wow. Well, thank you for that uplifting point of view, Mark. Do you agree with that, Laura? Do you think that people will riot in the streets if he is ever impeached or indicted?
Well, I would argue this is part of the reason why all of these things will move slowly, right? I mean, I think one of the most important things, if you look back to the Nixon situation and with Watergate, it was years of investigation, years of revelation, individuals being indicted over a period of time, and eventually when the evidence showed that the president had directed the Watergate break-in and had been involved in the cover-up related to the break-in, then what you had was Republicans who said to themselves, we really can't countenance this. And I agree with Mark that we are in a tremendously polarized era, and people want to be as loyal to their team as they possibly can, and that means being loyal to their leaders. But
We'll take the butt in a moment. Laura Brown is Associate Professor and Director of the Graduate School of Political Management at Georgetown. She's helping us suss out this Trump issue. It's The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're exploring the fallout this morning from the events Tuesday regarding Paul Manafort, who was found guilty on 8 counts dealing with finances, and Michael Cohen, the president's personal attorney, who pled guilty to also 8 counts, including campaign finance violations. And those last counts implicated, quote, a candidate running for federal office, unquote, whom Cohen was representing. We're taking your calls here, 800-642-1234. The phone calls are coming in, Laura Brown, but you were in the middle of saying something when we went to break. Let's finish that, and then let's get to phone calls.
Sure. Let me just say that I was saying, but I believe in our American democracy, and I believe in Americans, and I think that you can see this in some of the polling that has been done. You know, Stan Greenberg, who is actually a Democrat, he wrote a whole piece up in June where they analyzed sort of the Republican Party and the different factions within the Republican Party and their different senses of loyalty. Mm-hmm. And really what you get to is that when you're talking about the entire Republican Party, so let's just say that this is, you know, 45%, which might be a little bit high because, you know, we know that, that party affiliation is actually lower than that. But if you include the independent leaners, let's just imagine it's somewhere around 45 to 47% of the country are Republicans. Now, if we look into that percentage, you know, what Stan Greenberg has shown is that there's really only about 41% of that 47% that are truly, truly part of Trump's base. Mm-hmm. So we're talking, you know, in the range of like 21, 22% of the country who is in that place of kind of Trump can do no wrong. There are many other Republicans who are less enthusiastic, whether those are Catholic conservatives who've been kind of disquieted around all of Trump's behaviors at a personal level and also in the line side. There are also more moderate Republicans who care very much about things like free trade and are really displeased with actually some of the policies. So I think you will see a number of Republicans eventually move away. I would argue that in our country, you can always find 20% of the country who will support you no matter what on anything, including like the government's hiding aliens and things like that.
Right.
You can always find 20%.
I want to talk about something that the president tweeted yesterday. I think that's probably the first time I've said this on the air. But he tweeted something about Obama did this. Obama had a campaign violation. And when I looked it up, I saw that Obama's team put in a report. They filed a report 2 days late and they were fined for it. Is that correct?
You know, yes, it is correct in the sense that there are campaign finance violations that individuals do and do end up, you know, getting fined. Mm-hmm. But it's, I think, completely wrong to try to equate these things. I mean, what we're really talking about here is the difference between, you know, essentially not disclosing, you know, this in a timely manner, but still during the campaign, versus having this come out later in an investigation that is criminal, right?
Right.
So I do think there's a difference. You know, had President Trump sort of revealed a lot of this stuff at the time, he might be in a different place. Had John Edwards, a, you know, Democratic former senator who ran for president twice, had he revealed the payments to Riel Hunter, things might have also been different to him, for him.
And it's the same kind of thing. These may have been, in Edwards' case, we know more that it was a payment to hide personal indiscretion. And Trump says the same thing, although the Trump team says a lot of different things, but that this was also a payment to hide personal indiscretion. But it's the timing of it, and it's the fact that it's part of a criminal investigation, right?
Well, I think that's right. And I also think there's a difference about the severity of the crimes. I mean, it's clear that President Trump, as was true with John Edwards, were trying to hide a factual potential scandal from influencing how the election would play out. Mm.
But John Edwards was not convicted.
John Edwards was found guilty, as I recall. I mean, I'll have to look it up, but yes, he was.
Interesting.
And there were a variety of people. I mean, he was found guilty. My understanding was the charges were eventually dismissed, but I do believe that he was in fact guilty, and other people around.
Interesting.
The campaign was guilty.
So
I just think it's a much more complicated thing.
In the few minutes we have left, we're going to take some calls here. Steve from Sun Prairie. Thanks for calling, Steve.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I do find the hypocrisy hysterical. You know, I'm a Clinton voter. I voted for Bill Clinton, and I voted for Donald Trump. And Bill Clinton broke the law by lying to Congress. He committed perjury, which was a law, to hide potentially the same thing that Donald Trump is hiding. Both broke the law, potentially, and the liberals did nothing but defend Bill Clinton. I'm wondering if Donald Trump would have killed Stormy Daniels and left her dead in the river, similar to how Ted Kennedy did, that the liberals would be lionizing Donald Trump.
Interesting question, Steve. Laura?
Well, I mean, look, I also think it's important to realize that Donald Trump has yet to submit to an on-the-record, under-oath testimony. Bill Clinton was impeached on the fact that he did a testimony in the Paula Jones lawsuit, which was a civil suit, which was later dismissed as a frivolous lawsuit. Hmm. But he was on the record, under oath, and in that, he was found to have lied. So they did impeach him on account of perjury and on account of obstruction of justice, in other words, attempting to hide the affair. So I do think that one of the things we have to realize is this investigation hasn't gotten to that point yet. You know, you've heard Giuliani essentially argue that he doesn't want to put the president under oath because it's a perjury trap. Well, you know, unfortunately, as was the case in Bill Clinton's situation, he was essentially required to go under oath. His attorneys decided to negotiate a testimony rather than have him end up with the grand jury. But I think one of the things that's important is that we just haven't seen that yet. I mean, the Washington Post has documented over 4,000 mistruths right. of this president. And I think it's really kind of stunning to me that, yes, if Bill Clinton did lie and was impeached for lying, that it's kind of amazing to me that Republicans say, but Donald Trump's lies don't count.
We have time for one more call. Very quickly, Thomas from Milwaukee, welcome to the program.
Hello there. As a liberal, I've always felt that the fundamental principle of innocent until proven guilty is pretty important. And I'm a little dismayed at your guest and other people who are clearly just want Trump removed from office, seem to eject that because they think he's picky or whatever. Your guest should know full well. I'm surprised you brought up John Edwards, by the way. He was acquitted, and his actions were far, far more egregious. And we don't even know the facts underlying the Trump circumstance. I mean, that's a fact. Just because Cohen pled to the charge doesn't even mean he's guilty of
okay.
that crime.
Thomas, thank you very much for that. Laura, you have about 30 seconds.
So let me just say one thing about Trump. We actually have a tape that Cohen had made of Trump directing the payment. We also have, and if you look at the evidence that basically the federal district in New York has collected on Cohen, it is a preponderance of evidence that Trump was involved.
Laura Brown is an associate professor and director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. You're listening to the Ideas Network.